Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her My People show. I am your host, Mark Call, and of course, by now, hopefully you know, this is the show where we talk about so many aspects of what that admonition from Scripture is suggesting. Come out of her, my people, so that we don't participate in the sins and therefore don't partake of the plagues. I guess it's pretty obvious nowadays that the sins are rampant and so are the plagues. But what I want to talk about today is, let's call it potpourri with a point. We're going to address a number of different dots and connect them. They basically, I think, connect fairly simply into what has been referred to for quite some time now. But at this point, we can see it as the perfect storm. Call it cascading collapses, call it the grand supercycle climax, even a climax of biblical proportions. But in so many ways, there seem to be so many things coming together that I guess, as I've been suggesting for a while, if we haven't yet started to get it through our understanding what come out of her means and how urgent the process is, well, take a look around and now's the time. Let me start this way. So much of what we're seeing out of communist China, and I'm not referring just to the economics, just to the tyranny, just to the, kinds of people that are now running openly for president as what would have been the communist ticket, but now they call themselves Democrats or socialists or all kinds of things, but don't call them people who can be trusted to put their hand on a Bible. We have Bolshevik Verney at the, spear tip of the communist left. But regardless, so much of what would have once been called inbred America is now falling victim to a socialist cult. Oh, and hey, wait a minute. And then there are the plagues, too. And I'm going to address a couple of those issues. We'll go into some more detail on any number of those fronts today. But let me say this up front. You'll see it as we go through it, too. If this crisis is the crisis, well, is that the thing we are expecting? Or is it possible that this crisis is simply the, let's call it the John the Baptist, the warm-up act for the crisis yet to follow? Ultimately, it does make a difference, but only so much as timing is concerned. All right, let's start this way as we go through some of the things I've laid out here. One, follow the money. That's kind of good old-fashioned advice. Whoops, wait a second. Can't follow the money anymore. The money no longer really exists. So maybe instead we need to follow the fiat currency. Well, there's certainly trillions and even quadrillions of dollars of that, even though it's not worth what it once was. Let me begin with the several dot connector stories from various financial pages. I like this one, courtesy of the Economic Collapse blog, Michael Snyder. He references a new study, courtesy of Dun and Bradstreet, that concludes the new coronavirus outbreak in China, the so-called COVID-19, the Wuhan flu, got a lot of names, could impact more than 5 million businesses worldwide. Now, I've mentioned this before, but I want to at least make sure we understand this idea of supply chain cascading failures. Because as Al Snyder and many others have pointed out, including your host, a lot of folks just assume that if you can't get something from China, hey, just get it somewhere else. Make it somewhere else. But in a lot of cases, that's not so easy. And even if, for example, those factories could be moved back to America, and no doubt a few of them have come back, but certainly not the huge numbers that were exported during the Obama regimes and earlier, you'd still have to build the factories, train the workers, and move the supply chains, redo the contracts, and so forth. And as a number of folks have pointed out, like a Wally Shi of Harvard Business School, some things are still only made in China nowadays, not just the usual electronics and toys either, consumer products. There are a lot of pharmaceuticals, medicines and the like, and the ingredients that go into them worldwide that are single-sourced, only available there. So what happens if things in China don't get back to normal? And right now they're at a complete standstill. Well, ultimately, just-in-time delivery, a system that has, taken the economic world by storm, as the MBAs essentially have said, hey, we don't need to have warehouses anymore. We don't need to build products locally. We've got fuel prices really, really cheap. We can ship stuff from all over the world and have it show up on the dock just in time. Trouble is, if it doesn't show up just in time, you got production lines that shut down, things that don't get delivered, and yes, the dominoes begin to fall. The new Dun & Bradstreet study says the following. 938 out of 1,000 Fortune 1,000 companies have at least one what they call Tier 2 supplier that's in the region of China affected by the quarantines and shutdowns. 51,000 companies worldwide that have such problems, 163 of these are in the Fortune 1,000 that have Tier 1 suppliers, in other words, things that are critically important to them. While at least 5 million, and that's the number where 938 out of 1,000 Fortune 1,000 companies are included here, have one or more two-tier suppliers. So, at the very least, the breakdown in the global supply chains will lead to higher prices for Western consumers. Certainly, though, and this is important for all of us thinking about it here to understand, certain products simply won't be available at all, or they won't be available when you need them. Zero Hedge says that a survey from Shanghai American Chamber of Commerce has said that 50% of U.S. firms operating in China say that slowdowns or shutdowns of factories have already impacted their global operations due to the latest Wuhan coronavirus outbreak. And about 78% of those firms are warning that their staffing is short. So, yeah, expect massive shortages of products in Western markets over the near term. I want to skip ahead and mention one other story that I did a few days back on the news. What supply chains are most at risk, said Zero Hedge. And they point out, yeah, the obvious stuff we've already talked about, electronics, particularly things that are shipped by air. And this is one of the keys here. Things that come by sea tend to be the heavier products or things like grains and bulk items and so forth. And those can take literally a month or more to cross the Pacific Ocean or whichever ocean they got to go to cross in the case of products going to Europe. A month or more. Well, what does that mean? It means that you've basically got floating warehouses at sea. A lot of products that were already in motion when the bad stuff happened over there, and it'll take a while for those to percolate on down. On the other hand, things that tend to be light and high value, and again, here, think electronics and chips and circuit cards and the like, those things are often shipped by air. And what does that mean? Well, it means the impacts will show up faster there. As an engineer, I like to talk about lag. In other words, some things take a while to percolate through the system. It's kind of like great big dominoes. They topple slowly, and then kerbang, they come down, whereas the little dominoes kind of go faster. And that's kind of what we're seeing. Some dominoes are falling faster than others, and all of this is going to have varying effects as those things ripple through. And as others have already pointed out, look, it's almost impossible to judge exactly what all of the impacts are going to be when these things start to fall apart at the seams. One more quick story on the economic front here. Now that Apple has opened the floodgates, says a piece from Zero Hedge Today, they've made it clear that China's economic collapse will in fact slash revenue guidance in the near term. Second quarter doesn't look so good. And production at least through April, maybe longer depending. And there'll be an onslaught of earnings downgrades from other top high-tech companies, says Zero Hedge, while significant operations in China are also being shut down, and all of that is virtually imminent. Evidence grows by the day of supply chains grinding to a halt as the world's second largest economy has literally, well, ground to a halt. Economic output in China remains frozen, and even if supply chains are eventually able to restart, now this is an interesting point to understand too. Remember, China has a huge debt bubble. A lot of companies there just don't have enough capital to cover wages. Well, you know, in a slave labor economy, that's the good news. You don't even have to pay them, right? Just crack the whip and tell them show up anyway. Hey, they're already doing that. Or they've delayed or stopped paying workers. All of this says that COVID-19 outbreak may have left various companies, especially the smaller ones that aren't so much state-supported in China, on the very brink of disaster. And furthermore, workers aren't able to move freely around the country. Neither are goods and products and so forth. Many are subject to travel restrictions and quarantines, all of which has exacerbated that massive labor shortage and created that perfect storm. And again, more ripples probably coming. All right, with all of that on the table, what I want to do is change gears, but not a whole lot. Just a bit to another aspect of the cascading collapse, the grand supercycle climax, the perfect storm, if you will. And with that in mind, I'm looking at a piece that Doug Casey, the international man and a well-known libertarian author and economist, came out with about the United States and, of course, the fourth turning. Now, you may have heard this term. It was a famous book, came out over a decade ago by William Strauss and Neil Howe, and it was called The Fourth Turning. A lot of folks are aware of it. And what Casey does in an interview that he published just in the last day or so is point out a bit of history and a little bit of an understanding of what this fourth turning means. Oh, and isn't it interesting? It's happening at about the same time that all these other things are coming to a head. All right, he says, go back to Teddy Roosevelt, who he calls a really nasty president, the world's, the United States anyways, first real progressive president. Now you could read fascist, communist, leftist, fill in the blank. It basically means someone who is a lot more interested in expanding power, especially at the federal level, and constitution be damned. And Teddy started it, and his, I guess it's grandson, the even more evil Franklin Delano Roosevelt, kind of took it to a fascist climax via the New Deal. In any case, says Doug Casey, the U.S. has gone from being non-interventionist back before Teddy Roosevelt to now having literally hundreds of bases all around the world and giving orders to essentially everybody else in the world. And, of course, the world reserve currency, use it or else, is part of that equation. As a civilization, as a culture, he says, we've been on an accelerating downhill slide for about 120 years. And that's true. Even as science and technology have greatly increased the general standard of living. Now, here's the interesting and important point not to forget. It's a mistake, he says, and certainly your host agrees, to conflate, in other words, to confuse a higher standard of living with higher moral values. Machiavelli made that point. And as Casey points out, we have a situation where in the public cesspools, the public indoctrination centers, kids have been taught not to think. They're taught to emote instead, and a whole lot of things that even this fellow who basically self-describes as at least an agnostic, perhaps an atheist, would call the wrong values. He points to Marx and Lenin and others. I've talked about those enough, and the history that what I'm going to do is kind of cut to the chase here. All right, how about the fourth turning? Are we headed for a crisis? Well, says Casey, let me explain it this way. Strauss and Howe take a cyclical point of view over the course of about 80 years, which is how long it takes for one of these four-element cycles to complete. To briefly summarize their theory, there are four turnings in a cycle. And for those of you that know a sine wave, you can see how those would correspond to the peaks and troughs and zero crossings point of a sine wave, which is essentially the basis for all cycles. The four turnings are a high point, there you go, that's obvious, an awakening, an unraveling, and the thing we're heading to now, the crisis. Over the last couple of years, we've been seeing the unraveling, where old values fall apart. Witness, you know, the Ten Commandments falling into disrepute, the Constitution pretty much becoming a dead letter, and essentially the whole concept of thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder, well, those things aren't even taught anymore, and instead we have thou shalt commit homosexuality. If it's an abomination in Scripture, we'll mandate it, we'll subsidize it, and we'll teach that it's just great to seven-year-olds. He goes on to say, without going into the details, the baby boomers are the generation he would call the prophets. These are the ideologically oriented people, fire and brimstone types, kind of like Bernie Sanders on the far, far left, and at least allegedly Donald Trump on the right. And says, Casey, they're kind of biblically apocalyptic by nature. And I suspect probably a number of listeners to this network and these shows who are in the baby boomer generation probably understand what he's talking about. Generation X is the nomad generation. They're not so ideological in the way they think. And the millennials are those who correspond in Strauss and Howe's view to the World War II generation. They're the frontline soldiers, the cannon fodder for what's coming. All right, well, is there a positive way forward after this crash that they're writing about? Historically, says Casey, the answer is pretty much almost never, at least not in the short run. And he harkens back to the example of the French Revolution, which got worse with Robespierre, kind of the Bernie Sanders of his era, followed by Napoleon. Or you could look at Russia, where the Russian Revolution got rid of Tsar Nicholas II, but it still got even worse under Lenin and even worse still under Stalin. Eventually, though, France and Russia more or less recovered. So, if it all comes unglued in the United States over the next few years, these two revolutions could be a template for what we could expect. And to make that point, he says, look at the way leading so-called Democrats think. Listen to what they're saying. They're literally echoing Robespierre and Vladimir Lenin. And Republicans, of course, aren't much better. They try to talk about peace and personal freedom, but they almost never walk the walk. And you can witness Donald Trump essentially saying he supports the Second Amendment, but he's all for red flag laws and takings and calling things fully automatic machine guns when they're nothing but plastic parts. I'm talking about so-called bump stocks, even if they're not much more than toys. The principle has been extended to say we can infringe anything we want to, and we don't have to worry about what the Constitution says. Furthermore, we haven't seen Trump stand up for the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment in terms of illegal search and seizure, even when it applies to him, ironically. All of this ends up being quite ugly sociologically, says Casey. There are irreconcilable differences now between the left and the right. Your host has suggested that is being engineered, literally festered. And all of this is exacerbated by the fact that we are heading for a massive financial blow-up, and there's no doubt about that. He points out that a poll taken not long ago, and I could relate to this, says more recent generations believe that space aliens are going to invade than they're ever going to collect a Social Security check. You can hearken back to a bygone era, right? A previous part of the same cycle here, when Americans shared a common culture, beliefs, and values. That's no longer true. Again, folks, your host says that's by design. We are importing people who despise the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. They are taking positions of power in Congress. Whether they're voted in or not is no longer material. They're simply there, and the fact that they put their hand on a Bible and lied hasn't even slowed them down. It turns out, he says, that the country has become very politicized. Everybody has a loud voice, not much in the way of thinking behind it, and literally, they've been taught to use votes as weapons against their neighbor. We are now a nation of nasty busybodies. So, what's coming next, says Doug Casey, will probably be something like a revolution. It's likely to be very ugly, really, really ugly, because we are simultaneously looking at this perfect storm. Economic catastrophe, political chaos, and a social and demographic upset. Oh, and probably a military situation as well, because government often sees war as a way to, well, consolidate their power. He says unite the country. I'm not sure that that's the goal here. Divide the country and consolidate power is more like it. But in any case, when we get back to talking a little bit about the coronavirus or what follows and all of the plans increasingly being revealed for military martial law, you can kind of see how so much of this begins to come together. All right, as we go to break, I'll mention just a couple of other things. We'll lay out a few more dots and then connect them after the bottom of the hour. Here's one from the Gatestone Institute, Raymond Ibrahim, who says that when you look at the global persecution of Christians, and a lot of folks are probably familiar with that, it's reached unprecedented levels. 260 million Christians worldwide are experiencing high levels of persecution. This according to a recently published Open Doors World Watch List 2020 and an annual report that ranks the top 50 countries where Christians are most persecuted for their faith. And if Hollywood and New York and the District Criminal Swamp were separate countries, they'd probably be on the list. But given that they're offset by so much of flyover country and the basket of deplorables, we didn't quite make the top 50, but you can see it coming. Additionally, says the story here, almost 3,000 Christians were killed for faith-related reasons, and on average, that's about 8 a day for their faith. Almost 10,000 churches or various Christian buildings attacked. Lots were detained without trial, arrested, sentenced, imprisoned, and so forth. North Korea is the worst, and of course, as has been the case for a long time, in all the statistics and reports on global persecution of Christians, not only does Islamic oppression remain the chief source of that persecution, in 7 out of the 10 absolute worst nations, but fully 38 out of the 50 top persecutors are either Muslim majority or have sizable Muslim populations, with the result that a whole bunch of them are enforcing Sharia or Islamic law either directly by government or society, or more frequently by both. And aside from the Islamic oppression, the story continues, the targeting of Christians around the world has become more widespread than ever. Partly because we're seeing it take a technological concern turn. In India, number 10 on the list, Hindu radicals often attack Christians with little or no consequence. And what's the government going to do? They're going to introduce a national facial recognition system that can make it more easy. There's a fear that more tracking could increase the attacks. Gee, do you think? China, number 23, seeks to make all religions, including Christianity, fall in line with their interpretation of communism. Doesn't that sound a whole lot like Bolshevik Bernie and the sodomite that knows more about the Bible than anybody else because, well, he manages to turn it up on its head and CNN pretends that he knows what he's talking about? The irony here, folks, should not be missed. There are also places in China where they've added penalties, well, I guess China in general, for the illegally spreading Christianity crime. They have a surveillance state that makes it easier to prosecute such. And, of course, they're rolling out their countrywide socialist credit score system by which authorities plan to reward good little communists and punish the bad ones. And, of course, you know what that means. And if you're thinking ahead to the mark of the beast, we're probably on the same page. All right, where we're going to go next is back to the issue of the coronaviruses and some of the stories and misinformation and outright lies that are all over this thing. Now, it's almost impossible to keep up with the data. We've pretty well come to the place now where even the waste stream is beginning to admit that, yeah, the communists, now they won't say the communists, they'll just say the Chinese, but they can't say the communists because that would include them, and they all like to lie. So the figures essentially have been fudged. Real numbers are no doubt many, many times what we're being told. Perhaps at least an order of magnitude, maybe more. Stories in the last couple of days about how many incinerators, 40 mobile incinerators, ovens, have been deployed to the Wuhan area, and they can each deal with a whole lot of corpses per day. When you put them all together, they can burn the better part of 600 or 700 human bodies and associated clothing and so forth per day, although these are for animal corpses, don't you know? But they've been lying before. Why would we expect them to quit now? Where I want to go next is some of the consequences of that. You know, what does it mean for those of us here? We understand, for example, that the economic ramifications are clear, even if, for the most part, you're not going to hear it from the criminally negligent networks until, as your host here has pointed out for a long time, it may turn out that the shelves at Walmart end up being empty. And whether it's a coronavirus pandemic or an EMP or a grid down situation or a credit lockup or who knows what, eventually that'll probably be what wakes up most Americans. And we may be closer than that than people are aware. But there are other issues, too. All right, next, I'm looking at this piece from Doug. He calls himself the Uncola Lin. It was up on the Burning Platform and a number of other places. And all we have time to do is introduce his headline here, "The Pluses and Minuses," it says, "of Perceived Slyness." Now, that's kind of a polite term for lying outright and covering it up. Stuffed sinuses and coronaviruses. Now he says, "I'm no doctor, didn't even play one on TV, but let's be honest, we've all seen movies." He lists a dozen or more of them. Outbreak, World War Z, Contagion, 12 Monkeys, I Am Legend, 28 Days Later, and of course, one of them that doesn't fall into that category, but it's kind of interesting, is Close Encounters of the Third Kind, at least when it comes to one scene. And we all know how it ends, right? People drop like flies, anarchy ensues, and of course some major state organization, probably the UN, steps in to save the day. And the moral of the story, of course, is trust in the biggest brother you can imagine, even if they're the only ones left on planet Earth. Which takes us to the bottom of the hour break. We'll pick it up there when we get back, right after this. All right, we are back, folks. This is the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and today we're talking about kind of a potpourri of things with a point, and the point, of course, is whether we're talking cascading collapses economically or the grand supercycle climax or political machinations or, even a worldwide pandemic, we're looking at, it would appear at least, a perfect storm on so many fronts. Now, when we went to break, I was talking about specifically the Wuhan flu, the coronavirus, COVID-19, a lot of names for it, lots and lots of bogus statistics, who knows precisely what's going on, and that's kind of at least part of the point. What about coronavirus? Asked this piece from Doug the Uncola Lynn. Is it the plague for the end of an age, or is it just a marketing gimmick? And I mentioned this. We have seen booga, booga, booga plagues for quite a while now. Remember Zika virus, mouse pox, H5N1, bird flu, Ebola 1, Ebola 2, lots and lots of candidates for this worldwide global pandemic. Be afraid, be very afraid. Make sure you get your vaccination and make sure you understand that who? The UN is the only possible savior. They got the movies to show you the truth. Well, folks, whether this one is the big one or not, or as I pointed out before, just the John the Baptist for what's coming, it certainly is educational, and there is the old saying, truth is the first casualty of war. And this looks a lot like a war. Could be a war even between communist China and the United States. There's certainly a war between the deep state and the truth and the lies and so forth. So it does boil down to who do you trust? What can you believe? Yeah, is this the plague for the end of an age, or is it a marketing gimmick? Now, Doug Lynn goes on to point out all kinds of headlines. I've done a lot of them over the news stories. You've seen them. China disinfects banknotes. Chinese banks are quarantining cash. Hey, maybe you don't want that evil paper money anymore. Wouldn't this be a good time to bring in something electronic, all the better to track you? What if coronavirus, and he puts the registered trademark over it from here on out in the article, ends up being the new terrorism? Remember, war on terror, and we can do anything we want to you. Bring in the UN Special Contingency Team. All right. Well, he then goes on to say, look, let's put some of this in perspective. I frequently reference Nassim Taleb, the black swan, or even the white swan, as the Dr. Doom likes to put it. Things that seem like they're very unlikely, but in fact, they happen more often than you'd think. And that is part of the problem, because people don't understand risk, it seems. They don't understand the likelihood of dying by various mechanisms. Some are more scary than others, obviously. Firearms in school zones, even though they actually save a lot more lives than they cost, especially if you don't count the false flags, those are scarier. They get lots of press coverage. Asteroids hitting people aren't particularly scary. It certainly kills the person that they hit. It's just very unlikely. Well, it turns out that there's a whole lot of ways to die, probably more so than the COVID-19 coronavirus. For example, heart disease. As Doug puts it, it kills 1.4 million people per month. Yeah, that's over a million people each and every month. How about pneumonia? 450 million people globally, about 7% of the population, get it annually and results in about 4 million deaths per year. And there are all kinds of things, of course, that predispose people to be more likely to getting pneumonia. Smoking, obviously. Immunodeficiencies. Hey, think all the things that are being put in the food and the genetically modified frankenfoods and poisons and so forth. Alcoholism, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, asthma, chronic kidney disease, you name it. Even old age. What's the death rate there? Well, the 30-day mortality rate for pneumonia is between 5 and 10% of those that are hospitalized. But can be up to a third or 30% or so for those that are admitted into intensive care. And, of course, if you're not hospitalized, the rates are higher still. And, hey, isn't that more exciting? No, more frightening than coronavirus? Well, no, evidently not. Maybe, he suggests, that means coronavirus, registered trademark, has all the makings of a media event. A post-impeachment, just-in-time delivery to the people. Because, dear readers, he says, we're hamsters in a cage, and electronic media, propaganda, is the wheel. And yeah, this is hard to argue with. The registered form of coronavirus is all about establishing control. We're seeing it in China. They're literally welding people into their apartments, where essentially, if they don't have enough food and water, they're going to die anyway. It does make you want to ask the question, which is scarier, the disease or the corona response that's killing perhaps just as many people as the disease? And I guess that explains the incinerators. In the opinion of the blogger, says the Uncola guy, propagandized pandemics are meant to prompt quarantine and vaccinations. Your host has suggested beware forced vaccinations. If there's a lot of money to be made, and in fact there's hundreds of billions of dollars there, you can almost see them salivating for it, can't you? Furthermore, he says, and certainly here I would agree, and it's part of the bigger picture that I usually point out, healthy immune systems have a far better chance of fighting off any virus than perhaps people do of surviving the likely depopulation measures that tyrannical police states like China and soon America have coming, like quarantines and vaccinations. All right, quick aside on this score, some of the things that you can do. You can put a vitamin C on the list, vitamins D3, K2, most of the experts say take them together, all kinds of other herbals and things that will enhance your immune system, nascent iodine and the like. Certainly when it comes to actually dealing with infections, there are very good natural disinfecting agents like silver that the Creator gave to us, either a colloidal or ionic form. All of those things are good to have around, they're good to be aware of, and they're good to use while you still can, to enhance your immune system. Because, in fact, folks, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Scripture tells us what we can do. I've pointed out many times. Look, even though the lying whore church will tell you, oh, eat a pig, it's good for you, the Bible says no. And it never, ever, ever, even if you hear different lies about it, change that advice. I guess you could say that goes for presidential candidates, too, doing things that the Bible says carry a death penalty for other reasons, right? There are a number of things that are just politically incorrect, can't talk about them, but they are important if you'll read the book to keeping you alive. Back to the Uncola. Fear engenders control, certainly, and it seems hysteria has a higher transmission rate and is more sustainable in brain tissue than various coronaviruses. All right, where is all this leading up to? Well, if a coronavirus is intended to be a global pandemic, suggests Dave, the Uncola Lynn, it's a bit inadequate. In spite of all the electronic claims to the contrary, even those reported from a tightly controlled, propagandized communist nation. For the sake of argument, though, let's just presume that coronavirus really was maturing or mutating into a bona fide global pandemic. Got to ask the usual question, the Latin question, right? Qui bono, who benefits? Because as the panic expands exponentially, individual rights, and they are always the casualty, aren't they, will of course be greatly curtailed, and seemingly just in time. And guess what? It's all happening now. Everything about the coronavirus outbreak, one way or the other, you can err on any number of fronts here, smells rotten. Here's a question. Now, this is the important bottom line, and it's one that your host has asked in many different frameworks, venues, and areas of concern over the years. Why would any rational person trust so-called government officials? Remember Ronald Reagan, the big lie? Hi, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you. Yeah, why would any rational person trust people who've, well, turn on a TV, been guilty of lying on just about every front you can imagine, and generally getting away with outright treason and murder besides? Why would you trust them, or other experts, or the Orwellian media to tell you anything? Especially when past history has proven their predisposition towards what Dave refers to as subversive slyness. See, isn't he polite? Maybe, he says, I've witnessed too many of their misdiagnoses before. But at least for now, the death rate from healthy skepticism remains low. And that, folks, is really good advice. Regardless of whether or not the coronavirus is real, and how will you know, it is healthy to be skeptical about it. All right, at the front of this piece, I mentioned all of those various outbreak and so forth kinds of booga, 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 be afraid of the super virus pandemic movies. And in particular, one that folks that maybe don't remember the scene I'm thinking about might find a bit incongruous. This is Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, several decades back. And if you remember, Dreyfuss has this vision. He's got to go to what we know is that place up in Wyoming that has the really interesting-looking peak. Going to climb the peak. And, of course, when he gets there, he finds that it's completely surrounded by various feds wearing the, well, by now familiar white suits and saying, "Don't come in here. There's been a release of massive poison. You'll die." But he has a van and just happens to have all kinds of chickens in the back. And he's hoping they will alert him to the presence of whether or not this supposed poison is real or just a ruse designed to keep people out of the Devil's Tower area. All right, he gets stopped at the checkpoint. They haul him out of the van, and while he's out of sight from his chickens, who knows what happens, but when they bring him around back, the chickens, which he checked just a few seconds before, are now all dead. What an amazing coincidence, right? So the point, of course, is how do you know whether or not the big stories you're getting fed are true or not? Because the prudent course of action, as most people will point out, is stay indoors and don't go out. And if you hear stories about lots of people dropping over dead and your only access to communications is through the waste stream media, who are you going to believe? Right? As Bill Clinton used to say, me or your lying eyes. And you know he's lying to you too. That is, by the way, where another activity that your host promotes, ham radio, is useful. Because it certainly gives you the ability to at least check out what's happening over a much wider area, either through VHF communications, say over a period or a distance of many miles around you. Yeah, they'll try to shut it down and jam it and so forth, but at least as long as people have some familiarity with the technology and the ability to use alternative ways of getting information, hey, don't count on the cell phones too much. And in China, we're seeing how they'll shut those kind of things down. Well, it's good to have other information, and even then, you have to ask the question, do I believe what I am being told? Is it real or is it Memorex? Is it a real poison that killed those chickens in the back of Richard Dreyfuss's van, or is it just that Big Brother is covering his tracks? And if we see what's happening with Two Facebook and Gulag and the other socialist media platforms and how they're trying to shut down the likes of Mike Adams and Natural News or anybody that's telling you anything about this that is not officially government-approved propaganda, you get the idea. So here's the bottom line. Hope for the best, prepare for the worst. We've heard that before. Soon enough, we will know. Now, I've said this before, I'll keep mentioning it. If the supply chain breakdown continues, that's one good indicator. Now, we know it's already, at least supposedly, being shut down. We're going to see those disruptions. How big will they be? How pervasive? How high will that tsunami of global supply chain failures build up? Within a month or more, though, we ought to know if the shelves in Walmart don't empty out, that maybe this wasn't the big one that people have been waiting for. But again, at least if we're thinking about it, if we're planning ahead, we have some ways of trying to judge, just like Richard Dreyfuss did, whether or not they're lying to us. So, in summary, is coronavirus, registered trademark, the real deal? Is it a made-for-TV psyop? Is it a marketing gimmick? A man-made bioweapon, or could it be a biblical plague? Now, full stop. All right, as your host, I will suggest, hey, folks, nothing if we understand Scripture that says it couldn't be all of the above. Because if you look at the plagues and realize that at least for the first few that were described in the Exodus, the magicians of Pharaoh were able to duplicate them. You want some more lice? Yeah, we'll give you some more lice. And why not? You want some more dead people? We can certainly duplicate that one. Is this a plague of biblical proportions? Or could it be a man-made plague that just happens to be of biblical proportions? Yeah. As Doug the Uncola Lynn says in conclusion, really, what difference does it make? And he's right, but there's more, all right? That's usually the point that I have when I look at some of these stories. There is more. In a lot of ways, if we see what's going on here, if we understand where we're at, right, know the times and the seasons. So we, like the people of Issachar described in the book of 2 Chronicles, or all of those parables that Yeshua told people about, right, know the times and the seasons, know about when things are turning, see the parable of the fig tree, remember the story about the thief in the night. Lots of ways to point out you need to know what's going on. You need to not be fooled. Be not deceived. All right, that takes me back to some of the more nefarious aspects of what we're seeing. Here's a story from a little over a week ago about how it might be uncomfortable to face violent threats. Well, it's better to face them than run from them. But no doubt about it, there are a huge number of communists in the United States, especially coming out of the public cesspools, that have flocked to Bolshevik Bernie's campaign. And what they want to do is horrible. We've seen some stories published by Project Veritas, who recorded many of Sanders' staffers in candid conversations, in their own words, reprinted from Emoland by Rob Morse. They basically are saying things like, well, those gulags were founded as re-education camps. That's what we want to do. We want to send all the Republicans to the re-education camps. Another one said, I'm ready to start tearing bricks up and start fighting. I'm straight up going to get armed. I'm ready for the blankety-blanking revolution, bro. Guillotine the rich. They even said things like the Soviet Union wasn't horrible. No, it was the most progressive place to date in the world. And that at least is true, and it kind of shows you, well, how stupid, how ignorant, how evil these people really are. So, do we just cease? Do we just dissolve the Senate, the House of Representatives, the judicial branch, and have something Bernie Sanders and a cabinet of people, have them make all the decisions for the climate? I mean, I'm serious. They talk about how we need to strip power away from capitalists. I don't think they know what a capitalist is, folks. We haven't had any, at least not among those that they get angry about. Because we haven't had real capitalism. We've got fake money. You cannot have a true free market economy with fake money. Haven't had it for 100 years. But it's been really nasty for about 49 at this point, coming up on 49 years since we got rid of the last vestiges of any real money in the United States, or in for that matter, the world. All right, a militant labor movement, another quote here, is kind of our last real chance before we try other means. Yep, communists would suggest that utopia is just a few million corpses away. As Mao said, political power flows from the barrel of a gun, and no wonder the communists, including Bernie Sanders and literally every single person on that debate stage among the far left the other day, from Michael Bloomberg, the gun banner extraordinaire who wants to buy the presidency, to, well, you name it, all of them want to see the peons disarmed, and they don't think you have a right to any of those freedoms once protected by the Bill of Rights. And they've used the Internal Revenue Service, the Department of Justice, the ATF, the FBI, you name it, pick three letters to destroy what was left of Americans' freedoms. All right. How to survive the deep state? Isn't that really where we're all headed? Isn't that something that at least we need to pay attention to? I'm looking at another piece. This is back to Doug Casey, as a matter of fact, where the libertarian point of view says the following. Well, he's going to first start in this particular interview by saying almost everyone looks for a political solution to problems. And note that maybe people think they should get behind the likes of a Ron Paul. Note he says, not Rand Paul. Rand doesn't quite have the backbone that his daddy did. But understand that what we need to do is to allow a whole bunch of things to happen. Now, he's careful here pointing this out. I'm going to go through them quickly because none of us believe that they ever could. But the 7-part program, for entertainment purposes only, says allow the collapse of all the zombie corporations, banksters, brokerage houses, insurers, government contractors. The real wealth that they claim to own would still exist. In other words, the means of production, the skills, the equipment, the minerals, the farms, the agriculture, all those things would still exist. It's just the financial empire, the empire of debt that would collapse. Abolish all regulatory agencies. Bubus Americanus thinks they're there to protect him, but hey, from the CDC to the ATF to the transportation sexual abusers, those of us that have been paying attention know better. And for the most part, they're in the bed with the industries that they claim to regulate. Abolish the Federal Reserve. Yeah, it was put in place in 1913 to do exactly what they've done. Destroy the United States economy, even though it takes a long time. Remember the Wicked Witch of the West? These things must be done delicately. And yeah, if we understood what the Constitution says, it would be gold or silver. Nothing but gold or silver coin is to be made a tender in payment of the debt. Secure, sell all U.S. government assets. Some actually have some value, but they're better off in private hands. Eliminate the income tax. Eliminate a whole bunch of stuff that would fall apart without the Fed. And just plain default on the national debt and contingent liabilities. Somewhere between $23 and $200 trillion. Interesting. Now, that's a radical concept, but it's probably the only way it's ever going to happen. At least three reasons. Avoid turning future generations, like past ones have been, into serfs. That's the intent, of course. Punish those who have enabled the state by thinking that they were lending it money. And furthermore, prohibit, or at least make it impossible for the state to have a credit rating and to be able to borrow in the future. All right, well, we know that's not going to happen. But as Nietzsche once put it, that which is failing or falling certainly deserves to be pushed. Okay, let's cruise on down to what we can do in the real world in the last few minutes today. What should we do? Well, as you know, your host is going to take the summary position, come out of her, my people. We've talked on this show for literally years at this point, all the aspects of that. In terms of the things Casey just referred to, a lot of it is financial. Understand what's real money. Silver, kesef is what the Bible calls it. Honest weights and measures. We haven't had it for at least 49 years, not since 1971 under Tricky Dick, and not since 1965 when it came to silver and the coinage, not since 1933 when evil FDR stole the American people's gold coin, and not since, really, 1913 when the Fed started us down this, literal road to hell. So get out and understand what's real and what isn't. He talks about foreign real estate, where you're an investor to be courted rather than a beef cow to be, slaughtered and eaten. Look for depressed speculations, things like, I'm not going to list all of them here because some of them are frankenfoods. But understand that real food is real valuable. I want to quickly mention one other article. Global food production is being hit from every side, says a piece from Michael Snyder, the Economic Collapse blog, in Australia. The hottest and driest year on record, remember the great big fires, have slashed crop production. Hey, almost like what we saw in the Midwest and upper Midwest with huge late flooding and early frosts and so forth. The country's agriculture department down under said they expect crop production, sorghum, cotton, rice, to fall 66% to the lowest levels since records began. What does that mean? Well, understand. Things are going to get ugly, and they'll get ugly regardless of whether the coronavirus is real or a fake, or whether it's a biblical plague or simply a man-made one. But the response, the things we need to be doing now, are essentially the same. One definition of stupidity, concludes Doug Casey, is the inability to predict not just the immediate and direct consequences of your actions, which usually a six-year-old can eventually do, but also to be able to fail to predict the indirect and delayed consequences, the lag, as I like to call it, the dominoes that fall. And we're seeing enough dominoes that have already fallen to suggest, hey, understand, folks, the time to begin preparing, if you haven't already come out completely, is now. And in so many areas, we're talking about things we've generally always talked about. It's just that now the signs are literally, for the wise, for those with eyes to see, undeniable. Think about your health. Do the things you can to protect it, to enhance your immune system, and to come out that way. You'd certainly better have food and supplies, things that you might not be able to replace if the supply chains break down. How about parts to fix tools, automobiles, tractors, things that you need? Finally, let's not forget, healthy skepticism is good for you. We need to be able to communicate, too, to maintain it. But now is the time to start looking carefully into things that are real and trying to discern ways to predict, to understand whether you're being lied to or not, right? Richard Dreyfuss behind that truck. The dead chickens don't necessarily prove it. But if you have some way of looking around back, you know, somebody watching from a hillside, for example, talking to you by two-meter radio, you know what's going on. And finally, after healthy skepticism comes an understanding of who you trust, and that we can get from Scripture. And we certainly need to be doing all of those things now. Obviously, if all else fails, and you realize you're very far behind the power curve, certainly start with the last one. Make sure you understand who you serve, and study to show yourself approved. Thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.